Hello, and welcome back to Books, Cats, and Chaos, the podcast where we explore epic tales, sprinkle in a bit of messed up humor, and embrace the chaos of living with a bunch of cats and trying to read all the books. My name is James.
Hi, and I'm Casey, and we are a husband and wife team who love, like you said, all things books, cats, brews, and the chaos that's in between. We hope everyone has had a great new year so far.
This week, we dive into word marks, word gates, Riddarax, oh my. Please join us as we delve into chapters 41 through 46 of Throne of Glass. We are continuing on with our experimentation of our new format of doing a chapter recap and then doing a deeper dive into some discussion points of things that stood out to us in the chapters. So we're hoping to just basically get into the meat of each chapter quicker so we can talk about it, because that's why we're all here, right? So we can talk about it. I know that we're almost to the end of this book, but just as a reminder, this is my first time reading this series, so we are leaving out everything else. No cross discussions from ACOTAR, Crescent City, no theories are fine. If you got theories about what's going on in the book that we're reading, and you know, whatever, share it with us, as long as it's not a definite spoiler, because we don't want to talk about that. Definitely don't want to be talking about things from books later on in the series either. Like, if you got something from Kingdom of Ash, keep it to yourself.
I've been holding back on sharing a lot of memes and stuff. So far, I've been saving everything in a folder. So once you hit certain books, then I could share them with you, because trying to keep you spoiler-free as much as possible. And I know we have some friends, too, that haven't read Throne of Glass yet, so don't want to spoil too much for anybody else that is along this journey with you.
It's true. And what a journey it is. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now. There's some character. I want to give some smackdowns to some characters. I'll tell you what, because
just as a content reminder, this podcast is for adults only. We do cuss, and sometimes we cuss a lot. We also do a talk about adult themes. So just if you have little young ones about, maybe save this podcast for later.
Don't want to be offending anybody or teaching anybody any new words. So, you know. Although, yeah. Honestly, it's not that bad.
We try not to drop F-bombs every other word, but some words do slip in there.
And we also don't use a lot of creative profanities either. It's pretty standard stuff, so use your discretion. If you haven't already, but you like what you hear so far, please don't forget to rate, subscribe, or comment on this podcast or one of the multitude of social media channels that we have. You can find all of them linked in the show notes. You can find them on our website, bookscatsandchaos.com. Give us a follow on any of them or all of them. Give us some comments. Send us some messages. Let us know.
Yep. We look forward to hearing from you.
We would love to hear from you.
Yes. All right.
You want to take it away?
I will. We'll start with chapter 41. We start to get some answers from the word marks and word gates in this chapter. While reading more about word marks, Selena is starting to feel a little bad for suspecting Nehemia of nefarious things related to the murders and potentially attacking during the masquerade party. Symbols in the book look just like the symbols at the murder sites that she has seen. But alas, you know, not any definite answers, but there are notes in the margins of the book, despite being super old, Selena is able to read these notes. She learns that in order to summon a creature, a Riddorak, she must make a sacrifice and, using the victim's blood, mark the area around it. The mark guides the exchange. Flesh of the sacrifice and the beast will grant you this victim's strength. Selena searches and searches, but she can't find anything in the book regarding the word marks that she found under her bed. But now Selena has more questions. What is a Riddorak? Where was it summoned from? If magic is gone from the world, how are these creatures being summoned? Word marks apparently exist outside of magic, and word gates are being used to summon these creatures. Selena starts to suspect Nehemia again. That was quick. What purpose would Nehemia have of summoning these creatures? And where would she keep them? Is it for large-scale rebellion? Something large enough to topple the king? And there is another pattern to the champion murders that she's now seeing. All the murders occur within 2 days of a test. And of course, there is a test right around the corner. Selena, not wanting to get murdered in her own room, makes her way down through her secret tunnels. This time, at the three-way crossroads, she notes fresh footprints in the dust, not hers, and decides to follow them. As she approaches a corridor, she hears a voice speaking rapidly, chanting. But it's not Nehemia's voice. No, it's a man. Speaking a guttural and harsh language, something she doesn't recognize. Peeking around the corner, Selena discovers Cain, kneeling before darkness so black it seems poisoned to devour the or it seems poised to devour the world. Secret portal. Sorry, I had to.
No, it works. You know what? It's
I know that was never part of the thing, but I had to throw that in there.
You know what? If Avatar dealt with portals, it would have been in there.
Right. I kind of figured, but so, were you surprised? I have to ask, were you surprised to find out that it was Cain? Or Cain's at least involved somehow?
You know what? I think once we established the whole thing about the offering of the flesh and then you gain the strength of the sacrifice, I was like, oh, that's Cain. Like, there's no other reason that he would be bulking up
so
quick. Like,
yeah,
that just to me, that was, oh, that's A, that's B, boom, lock, done. Like, at that point, I was just waiting for it because it's like it's the only thing that makes sense. And especially with his freak out, right, that he had in the tunnel before, was that last one or the one before, you know, where he was like gasping for air and stuff, and you know, we knew the boy wasn't right. Like,
yeah, something was going on. Something was happening.
So, yeah, not a surprise. It did not write Nehemia out of the picture yet because I did not see Cain as the mastermind. I see him as a tool.
Okay.
Whose tool? I don't know. But I could see where somebody said, look, here's a thing. Do the thing, and you'll get powers for the thing. Right? Like,
yeah.
That was the way I kind of was piecing it all together. I know that when I was looking at it, I kind of questioned, so she went down, right, and she saw the extra footprints in the three passages. But during all this time, there were footprints of people, other whatever, and none of them ever like came up and somehow found themselves in her room.
Right?
Like, is that just like dumb luck, or
maybe Cain was just so focused on his little corridor area? I mean, we don't know how vast all these passageways and stuff are. We do know that one of the passageways leads to the sewer system. So, you know, it's got to be big.
But
it just seems weird that she doesn't see the footprints before. And now she's here and suddenly there's footprints leading this other way.
Unless she was meant to be the next one. I mean,
true.
You know, maybe they were like, we know that she's around here somewhere. And
so it makes you wonder, too, if her secret passage tunnel that, you know, connected to her room, connected to the other champions' rooms. And that's how they were able to draw them.
Well, it had to connect somewhere, because otherwise, how did he get in? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, he could have come up from the sewer, I suppose. But we know that the other passageway went to that overlooking thing, you know, where she could overlook the court.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it probably is a much larger networking of tunnels that just wasn't really explained.
But, I mean, I'm just realizing, so hers, you know, we've been calling them secret tunnels or secret passageways that lead to Elena's tomb and the sewers and to the ballroom, or the passage that looks over the ballroom. But the other champions were actually found in an old servant's passageway. So I wonder if they connect or if it's something totally different. I don't know. I wish there was more, more something,
yeah.
More meat to this, you know?
I would have liked, like, if there was a revelation where she, it didn't even have to be at this point. Maybe it would have been prior, where she was like, man, these tunnels go
everywhere
in the castle. Like,
yeah.
No wonder people are getting murdered, because there's a whole network back here. It's like the secret tunnels at Disneyland, right? That the cast members use.
Yeah.
They get through the whole park and nobody ever even has to see them. They get on their little trolley carts and just zip from one to the other. And, you know, is it like that in the castle? I mean, even the castle that we went to in, you know, in Ireland, there was, you know, you could see a fair amount of people going around without ever coming across other people, you know?
Yeah.
So, and this castle's supposed to be humongous.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if it's made out of glass, no.
Well, you have to remember that where Selena and Prince Dorian are staying, they're part of the Stone Foundation.
No, I know. I just...
But yeah, how do secret passages work in a glass castle?
Only in the old part.
They're like, we see you. We see you. What you're doing over there.
Yeah, so...
I just made a little note, like, what is a Riddorak? I mean, I know later on it gets described, but, like, as somebody who reads fantasy and has always read fantasy growing up, like, you learn a lot of different monsters and creatures and stuff, and never heard of a Riddorak before. So I thought maybe it might have been connected to the gargoyles, because I still want something to be connected to the ding gargoyles on the watchtower.
Me too.
Or clock tower. Okay, so that's good. I thought maybe I was the only one, but... Yeah.
I thought maybe the Riddorak was like a flesh embodiment of the gargoyle.
Mm.
At this point, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's why they said beware the gargoyle, because... And then if Kane's got a portal and it's like, yes, I'm bringing the embodiment of... So it's not like they're stone and then they turn flesh. It's more like that's their stone body and he's bringing in the... flesh body of, you know what I mean,
of the creature. Yeah,
of the creature. That's what, kind of what I was like, oh, I wonder if that. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know, like I was still hoping for the gargoyle connection, but it was interesting to learn about a new sort of creature, a new sort of demon type thing. I really want to know Kane's motivation, because I remember at the start of the book, Selena describes him as a pretty big guy. And, you know, like one punch from him would knock her out. But then over the course of all these chapters, he's been growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we know why, or we suspect why. So what is his motivation? Because it sounds like he could have handled himself throughout this competition without needing to steal other strengths.
Yeah. He's like Bane.
So, yeah, I one of my like lingering thoughts, like it would have been nice to know what his motivation for that was. It was he just wanting to secure his spot as the King's Champion, or was there some other motivation behind it?
You know, maybe he didn't have a motivation at all. Maybe he didn't even have a choice. You know, he's sponsored by Parrington, right?
Yes.
And we already know that he's from the Wolf, what is it, the White Fang?
The White Fang Mountains.
So we already know that he's disagreeable, too. So I kind of wonder if he was never even given a choice.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
they came in and they did the weird voodoo whatever crap to his head, and he's been lights out, you know, just doing as ordered kind of thing.
Could be. That's a good way to look at it.
Because, yeah, it just doesn't seem like there would be motivation for him. I could see a big guy like him being secure enough and being like, look, none of you guys are going to beat me. There's no way you guys are going to beat me.
Yeah.
And guys like that are not typically ones who go in search of ways to get more, you know, because he's already confident enough in his abilities. So doing this seems, from what we know about Kane, seems like it would maybe be out of character for a character with his history. At least the way I kind of look at it, I think I would be willing to bet that he didn't have a choice.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that, especially being sponsored maybe by Parrington.
We know Parrington's bad news. Like,
oh yeah. Definitely.
And Parrington is the kind of person to have multiple, you know, he's got the one thing he's doing with Kaltane.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he's, you know, in league with the king in, of some sort, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not unexpected for him to be like, I'm going to hedge my bets here and make sure that my champion is also basically immortal. Like,
yeah,
you know, covering all his bases. I could see Parrington doing that.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, so, of course, we just take that, and we're going to roll right into, you know, chapter 42, and of course, it's Kane. And he's getting bigger and bigger, stronger during the competition. The creature, the Ridorak, emerges from the portal and is something out of an ancient god's nightmare. Kane slowly stands, and surprisingly, the creature actually bows to him, which is not the dynamic that we were expecting.
Not at all.
Selena is surprised to discover that word marks work, word gates are real, which is a conversation I think we've had before about her with her knowledge of word gates. The Eye of Elena seems to pulse at her throat, warning her, telling her that she needs to run. Kane spots her and tells her it wasn't supposed to be her tonight, but since she's already here, he's not going to waste the opportunity. I'm going to circle back on that one later. Moving with superhuman speed, Kane grabs Selena's makeshift knife, slams the door shut, and traps her in the room with him and the Ridorak. The greenish light is coming out of the word marks on the floor. The Ridorak is pacing back and forth. The creature likes its victims alive, which is not surprising. And we've got some good action going on. There's a chase, and as Selena rushes to Elena's tome, the door is already open, which is weird. She grabs Damaris, the sword of the ancient king, before she puts it through the Ridorak's face. The black blood sprays on her. The amulet throbs against her. She blinks. She kind of comes back to her senses. And she, you know, starts working through this process of getting herself away from the creature, getting out of the creature's teeth. and cleaning up. So she cleans up this. She cleans the sword with her shirt, puts it back, which I'm not, you know. And she goes to Elena's sarcophagus. She gives thanks before making her way back to the room, noting that the wound on her hand is not closing properly. She's feeling dizzy. Her limbs are feeling icy. She's been poisoned. She hears Fleetfoot whining, and a female voice cries out. It turns out it's Nehemia running towards her, reaches her, and carries her to a bathing pool. Once she gets in the water, her hand burns, and she starts just thrashing about. Nehemia recites words that Selena doesn't understand. Lights in the room pulse, which, okay. And Selena's arms are covered in glowing turquoise marks, which are the word marks, and then she passes out. So, there's a lot
of action there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right there. And, you know, right off, I did have an initial thought. So Cain sees her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it wasn't supposed to be her tonight, but since she's already there, right? So that suggests that there was an order and a plan on which champions were killed and when they were killed, and it wasn't necessarily just some random thing. Like, there was a plan to pick each one of them off. And my thought was, is that because when they're killed and sacrificed, like, is Cain just getting bigger, or is he gaining innate skills that the sacrifice champions had?
Like, oh, interesting.
Would he have, like, if he had gotten her, would he have gotten her, you know, swiftness, assassin, like, something, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah.
So maybe it's because I watch too much, like, cartoons and, like, the anime stuff, but maybe, like, it's like leveling up, right? You kill the one champion to get the thing so that by the next test, you have that skill that helps you get past that one easier.
Mm.
And then you go, oh, the next test, I'll kill this one. So he must have had insider information about what the tests were going to be, maybe.
You think so? Or
I'm kind of going off on a, you know, if that's the way that it worked, and he was actually gaining not just strength and size, but also ability, then he would have to know what ability he would need in order to, like, progress.
Yeah, for
easier.
Each test.
That's
an interesting theory. I wish we would have gotten more. Like, all we know is that he got their strength, but what is, like, just physical strength, or, you know, did he, like you say, get their skills, their talents? That would have been a great just discussion. That would have been a great knowledge drop somewhere in the book.
Yeah, it just seemed odd that he would have said something like what he said, you know, which was, it wasn't supposed to be you, but we'll take it, you know?
Yeah, like, he's not going to waste the blood and everything.
So who was it supposed to be? I mean, there's only five of them left.
Yeah.
Right? So, who was on the chopping block that night? That's what I want to know.
Not right. Was it going to be Nox? Was it going to be, you know,
right.
his...
Yeah, it could have been any of them. So, you know, so we've got that, and then we've got this great scene with her, you know, really struggling to stay alive because the Riddorak is not only, it's a predator. So
yeah.
It's big, it's fast, and apparently it's got poison. Like,
of course it does.
So, you know, it's not a great situation for her. I would say she was probably incredibly lucky that this happened in the area that was in the tomb that she had already been to, and she knew that there was a sword there. Because otherwise, yeah. She would not have come out of this. Like, now, whether that was guidance from Elena or, you know,
higher forces.
Because, I mean, the door was already open for her.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the door's never locked, but those precious seconds when you have to open a door.
Oh, yeah. They eat up time, and that could have been her downfall right there. So, yeah. It was interesting that with no magic in the world, the door was open for her as if waiting for her.
But now we know that the word marks and the word gate stuff, they do not apply. Mm-hmm. Or magic doesn't apply to them. They are something else.
Something more.
Something older, or they're the basis of magic. And so you can't banish the... You know what I mean? Like, you can banish the magic, but you can't really banish the structure of what makes the magic or gives you the ability to banish magic. Like, it's all built on the same platform.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an interesting, like, kind of a little, little revelation that in a world with no magic, there is still something that doesn't have to follow those rules. And so that gives us an insight to the other things that are happening and why this threat is so real. Because you've got people who are not playing by the same rules.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else is screwed. But So then we've got, you know, she gets poisoned because she gets bit. No, bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets bit. I couldn't remember if she got bit or scratched. So she got bit. She gets poisoned. And, you know, she... Interestingly enough, when all this is going on and she's fighting the Riddurek, Kane just... He just nopes out. Like,
right? Like, that... to be honest, that bugged me in that part of the story, because you would think if Kane wants her strength, he would have to be nearby for the Riddurek kill, I would think.
Or maybe the summoning is all he needs to do, and then it...
Maybe.
When contract is done, suddenly he's like, ooh, I'm feeling good. You know, like...
But you would also think that he would want to make sure of the kill, because otherwise the person... Selena can go and be like, hey, Kale, or hey, whoever, Kane is the one behind all of this. Arrest him, you know? Like, I just was almost murdered. So, yeah, it bugged me that Kane was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I have, you know, the one thought I have on that is that he probably just could not fathom any... possibility that she was going to survive this just based on what he has seen this thing do prior.
Yeah.
And maybe there's terms that you have to let the Riddurek make the kill. Maybe if he kills her, he doesn't get the power. Like, the contract is, I bring you here, you get to kill it, and then whatever. But if I interfere, then it kind of negates the
whole thing.
The whole process there, because you're getting in the way of... And maybe if he's in the way, the thing would turn on him. Who knows? You know, maybe he's like, good, you're good. I'm gone. Okay, see you later.
It could be, but wouldn't you also want to know where she came from? Like, how did she discover the secret tunnels? And how did she get there? So, like, wouldn't you want to follow at a discreet distance, let the Riddurek, you know, take care of its business, but also follow to see, one, make sure one of them died, and then to see where she had branched off from, and then, lo and behold, he has discovered her room and how to get into her room now. Like, I don't know. I felt like that whole ball... was just dropped, and we could have had more.
Right, because, I mean, if if he had, stuck around, then Nehemia would not have been able to get her.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could have interfered. I mean, yeah, there's so many things that he could have done if he had not just disappeared from the scene.
Yeah.
It's like literally he brought the Riddorak in and he was like, okay, cool. And then...
peaced out.
he was gone, which was, not what I was expecting of the character, which kind of makes you kind of wonder that I don't think he's operating with a full deck anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's literally he gets instructions. It's like, go do this, boom, 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 and reap the reward kind of thing. And he's just like, yes, okay. I don't know. It would have been, I want to know where he went. At least why he left. Just odd.
I also was bothered that Celaena put the sword back. After finding out, what this Riddorak monster thing was and seeing it and, barely surviving it, I get that the sword is, this ancient, blah, blah, blah. It should be with, the sarcophagus and all that. I would be like, no, my survival is first. I will find a way to hide it in my room. Or now is the time to tell Kale everything. And be like, bitch, you're either going to let me have weapons here or, something. But I'm keeping the sword.
For now, anyway. Or put it back later.
Yeah, exactly.
When this whole thing is done, then you go, okay, Elena, Gavin.
Here's your sword back.
You can have it back now. I'm done with it.
And, I mean, she doesn't know where Kane went. She doesn't know if Kane is hiding in one of the tunnels.
He could have been around the corner.
Exactly. What the hell is she going to fight him off with? Ladies, keep your swords.
All I can think is maybe she wasn't thinking clearly because she's been poisoned.
Yeah, and the adrenaline of the fight, and she's just wanting to get back to her room. I get it. But she took the time to clean the sword before putting it away.
True. So, yeah, so she's trying to get back into her room, right, from the tunnels. She hears Fleetfoot crying, and then she hears a female cry out, which is saying, okay, why was Nehemia coming to look for her?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember did Nehemia find her in her room? Or did she find her in the tunnel?
No, in her room.
It was in the room, right?
Yeah, Celaena made it back to her room because she had shut Fleetfoot out and Fleetfoot was trying to get into her room. And so I think Nehemia opened the door and then they both saw Celaena had collapsed.
Right. And so then, she takes her to the pool.
Yeah.
And then, so now we find out that, Nehemia is... pretty sure Nehemia's on her side now because she's gone out of her way to try and heal her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's chanting some sort of magic. She's got Celaena has word marks that show up on her arms. Not a lot of information was given about that. I kind of figured that it was a result of whatever Nehemia was doing.
Part of her chanting or something.
And that it was like a targeted healing spell kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Because otherwise, I mean, how would they have gotten there? She didn't have time to put them on her in her sleep, although with all the people who sneak into her room.
I know, Dorian could have painted all sorts of things on her arms and she never would have woken up.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a testament to how much she trusts Dorian that she can just stay asleep or stay focused on, playing the pianoforte or whatever. And never hears her damn bloody hinges.
Yeah, I don't know. But so we at least know that Nehemia is not her immediate enemy. she is, she is motivated to keep Selena, Lillian, safe for some reason.
Yeah.
We don't exactly know why yet.
I mean, they're friends. Right. You would want to keep your friends safe.
But was it just dumb chance that she was going to her room that night? I mean, just coincidence, I mean, or, you know, something else, I guess, is what I'm trying to, like.
Yeah. Okay.
But we know that she has secrets, so it kind of feels like she's been keeping an eye on her, and she realized somehow that something was wrong, and so she thought, I better go check on my friend, and then, oh, lo and behold, my friend is dying.
Yeah.
You know. And good thing, too, because Selena didn't tell anybody, and Dorian or Kale would have found her the next morning, and they would have been like, what the hell?
She dead. Why is she dead?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, and they would not have known anything because Selena still refuses to tell anybody her findings or what's going on. Like, she knew that a murder is going to be taking place either that night or the next night. She knows something's going on with these word marks. She could have at least left an effing note, right?
Something for somebody.
Something for somebody before she goes trailing off, you know, into these secret tunnels, and she doesn't know what she's gonna find, you know? She doesn't know what lays with the word marks or the word gates. I mean, she knows now, but if you don't know something, tell somebody. Leave a note, anything, because otherwise the murders and stuff are just gonna keep happening. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's, sometimes she's a little frustrating.
A little bit. Love our girl Selena, but yes, she is frustrating.
I don't remember. Why did she go into the passageway that night?
She did not want to be murdered in her room. So she was like, let me go in the secret tunnels and see if I can find anything or find anyone.
Oh, because she had put together that the murders were happening near the test.
Yes.
And she didn't, yeah. And she was like, I'm going to go somewhere else. And lo and behold, she...
Yep.
She walked right into that one, didn't she?
Of course.
Well, thank goodness for Nehemia.
Yes, Nehemia pulled through. In chapter 43, Selena comes to, fully healed with some new faint scars. Nehemia demands to know what is going on. Selena's worried she missed the test, but finds out she was only out for about 3 hours. If Nehemia hadn't had arrived when she did, Selena would have died within minutes. Selena comes clean and tells Nehemia Lillian isn't real. She is really Selena Sardothian. Nehemia doesn't believe her at first, but then realizes Selena learned Elway of the peasants from the slaves at Endovir. Selena tells her that the king knows she is here, and that she is here for his amusement and to be part of this competition. If she wins, she has to be the king's assassin for 4 years, then her name will be cleared and she will be finally free. Without saying anything, Nehemia's stare still kind of damns Selena. Selena lashes out about this, but Nehemia comes through in the end, as a friend should. She traces a mark on Selena's hand and gives Selena a name, Alentia, the spirit that could not be broken. Selena proceeds to tell her almost everything else except for Cain and the Ritterak.
You know, two of the, like, most important things.
Why tell her everything else but these two things?
Man.
Moving on, next morning, Kale walks Selena to the training hall. He remarks that she's awfully quiet. Did she happen to have a fight with Dorian? Did she enjoy dancing with him? He seems a bit bitter about all of this. Selena remarks that Kale is the one that left early and thought he was going to guard her all night. He comments he doesn't need to watch her anymore. And they fall into their easy, teasing banter. She wants to tell him about Cain, but still holds back. If she tells him, she would have to show him the dead creature, the secret tunnels, her possible escape, everything. She couldn't risk telling him about the unguarded escape route, just in case she needs it for later. She decides that she just needs to defeat Cain in the duel, and no one will have to know anything about it. She's already defeated the great evil, right? Right? Before they start their practice, Kale asks her, "Do you know what you're getting into with Dorian?" She wants to know if this is for her sake or for Dorian's, and he is honest and tells her it's both. They train for an hour before heading back to her room. As they discuss a book she's reading, they run into the King of Adderland. Dun, dun, dun.
We haven't had much from the king, honestly.
No, a little bit at the beginning, but he's been away doing something.
You kind of get the idea that people kind of forget that he was, when he's there, he also probably just walks around the castle and she hasn't seen him at all. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, she it.
I mean, she saw him like her first day there or second day. And then he left. It's easy to forget in like that 3 month span of time of training and testing and everything. And then, for him to suddenly be there and to like run almost smack into him, that's a little jarring.
Yeah, that would throw that would throw anybody off. But I feel like we need to talk about. It's irritating that. Selena isn't really any different from the majority of these characters, right? She's trying to do whatever she can to survive, get out of the crappy situation that she's in her life. And every time she turns around, somebody is giving her shit for it. Right? Kale sitting there going, but you're an assassin and da da da. It's like, yeah. You knew that from the beginning.
Yes.
And then now she's telling Nehemia, this is the deal. I got to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And then I can be free. And Nehemia's like, you would kill for the king? And she's like, not because I want to.
I have no other choice.
But the options are kill for the king. Or go back to the mines. And if I go back to the mines, I'm not coming back this time.
Right.
Like, that's an impossible choice. Most any person, is going to pick the thing that they think is going to give them their freedom.
You know,
it's like these people forget and they keep expecting her to be like, above all of this. And it's like, no, why would she be?
She's just trying to fight for her survival, for her freedom. And I don't know. Like, the whole moral high ground of Kale and Nehemia is just so bothersome. Even Prince Dorian, who is a prince, seems to accept her for who and what she is. And is like, I want to, clear the path to have a relationship with you. I don't care that you're an assassin or that you're still going to be an assassin. Like, I'll find a way to make it work. I mean, as unrealistic as that is for the prince.
I mean, she's probably like the first real person that he's interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
I say she has no mask with him. Like, she does, kind of. But she's not giving him like a double personality. She is very much like, look, I like candy. I like food. I like frilly things. I like books. And I'm also really good at slitting people's throats when I need to. This is me. And he's like, okay, cool.
I can roll with this.
Like, thanks for being honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is also new to her. She's kind of like, what's the catch? And he's just like, it's good. You're fun. I like it.
Yeah. She's able to be herself with him, and she doesn't have to remain on guard like she still kind of has to do with Kale.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's just irritating because she's literally no different than any other character in this place. When you think about it, even at that point, she's no different than even Lady Caltaine.
Yeah.
She's just trying to find a way to better her situation, and she's mm-hmm. doing whatever she thinks is going to get her there.
Yeah.
It's the same exact situation.
Yeah.
Just.
I agree.
You know, so.
It still bugs me that she still won't come clean with Kale about the murders and her theories and suspicions, you know?
Yeah.
He needs to know what's killing these champions. And now she finally knows. She's seen it. She's battled it. And I get her struggle because that is her secret way out. Like, she could take these tunnels and slip through the sewers and, you know, dart across the kingdom. And if she were to tell Kale everything, she would lose access to that. But at the same time, people have been dying. She yeah. almost died.
But, like, at the same time, though, you know, she tells him all that, and he could sit there and be like, what do you mean there's an unguarded tunnel? Like, and then, yeah, he could put guards out there or something, but then she could just be like, look, bro, I could have been gone on night one.
Yeah.
Okay. You never even would have known what happened to me.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I'm here. At this point, I'm not. If I haven't left yet, I'm not leaving now because.
Yeah. You know, she's so close to the final duel to be the king's champion. She wants her name publicly cleared.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be. You know, I could see him being obstinate about it. But I could also see if she was just honest and upfront and said, look, I could have been gone. I'm not. And he would be like, yeah, you're right. Like,
yeah, see, I think Dorian would have been like, yeah, you're right. Like, you were a flight risk, but I don't think you are anymore. I think Kale would have just, with the stick up his butt, would have been like, no, you got to change rooms and we're going to have to post guards in all these tunnels and.
He would, even yeah. after falling asleep in church with her.
Yeah. That's yeah.
Yeah. Would. So. Sometimes these characters are, you know, they're a little irritating with the things that would definitely help them with their. Progression through these issues,
mm-hmm.
and then they withhold the key information, and you're just like,
yeah,
why would you do this? Why would you do this? But anyway, so they go, her and Kale are, you know, having their conversation, and we're getting a little bit more of Kale apparently being jealous, right? Again, we're seeing this flare up here and there, particularly when she's with Dorian, and he's very much like, did you have a good time? Did you have a good time? And she's like, bro, just chill.
Like, dude, I asked you to dance first and you said no.
Yeah. But I feel like they've kind of, you know, as they're falling into this, you know, back and forth thing, right? Then they come around the corner and there's the king.
Mm-hmm.
And I just imagine they're coming around the corner and it's like one of those situations where it's like, oh, you see the king? I shouldn't even be breathing. Like, he's that kind of figure, right? Because you just don't know if you breathe too loudly, whether he would be like, yeah, chopping block for that one.
Yeah.
Right? That's the kind of... So they both, you know, they see the king. They both basically shut up and they're like... They bow as the king goes by. And the king seems to be, you know, very focused on her. Like, she can just feel him, like, peeling the layers, right? Looking for something. Because, of course, he is back now, right after this encounter, right, with this creature. He's been gone this whole time. And then she finally encounters the creature, kills it, and then all of a sudden the king is like,
I'm here.
Something going on here. You know? And so we're really kind of questioning, what does the king know? What is his position in this? Does he know the king can open portals? Does he know anything about the word marks? Does he know that these magical things work, even though magic is banned? And not just banned, but magic doesn't work, allegedly. We note that there's darkness in the king's eyes, cold and foreign. You know, we've heard that before. She could hear the din of war. There's just a very dangerous aura about him. Sort of an air of death that she feels is similar to that void that she saw around Cain. Just something otherworldly, but it just reeks of death. And so Selena remains silent on their walk back, and she sticks closer to Kale than she normally would, and he doesn't object, right? Back in his own chambers, Kale is pacing. He read the report of the king's journey, tried to make sense of it. The king arrived alone. There were no guards with him. Everyone in his party died. They had gone to the White Fang Mountains, which is where Cain's from. And, he went with a bunch of dudes, came back by himself. And Kale is looking at this and he knows that there's a lie buried here somewhere. But it's not really his place to question it, because he is, you know, just the guard, captain of the guard. The king doesn't owe him anything. But at the same time, he's questioning how come the king doesn't trust him enough to tell him what really happened. Because at this point, did the king run into an ambush or rebels, you know, or what happened? How did the king come back by himself? And we're assuming fairly unscathed, which is also kind of odd, right? Like, he's reflecting on how Selena reacted to the king when she was in the same room with him, and how she seemed frightened, like a frightened animal. But then he also kind of compares that to how she came from Endovir, and how he feels like she's sort of starting to outpace him. He has become fond of her, but if she were to become the king's champion, how could he let her out into the world, you know, again? So Kale's got a lot going on right now. I mean, you know, he's trying to analyze this whole situation and multiple, you know, situations. But he's got stuff he's got to focus on. You know, he still feels like he's got to focus on these murders, even though, I mean, at this point, it's like so many of them have happened.
Right. And they're near the end. They have a test and then they have the duel. And so, like, what would even be the point?
Yeah, I don't quite get, like, it's like, I really need to focus on these murders. What the hell have you been doing for the past 6 weeks? Because,
right, like, you haven't gotten any leeway with any of it.
You certainly haven't stopped them.
Yeah. Well, no thanks to Selena, but he doesn't know that.
She could have solved that problem for him.
Right. I found it interesting on the third sentence of this chapter, Selena notes that each of the little scars on her hand throbbed. You know, she had just gotten bitten by the Ritterak, and so she still has the scars from that. And so when she runs into the king, those scars start throbbing. Like, I mean, scars tend to throb, you know, like when we get scratched by the cats and stuff. You know, running your hands underwater or soap will sometimes sting and stuff, but I just found it interesting that running into the king made those throb out of all things. And we get this sense of darkness from him, and then we got the Ritterak coming up this dark portal, and it just, you know, similarities with Keltaine's headaches and throbbing, with Parrington's ring pulsing. So we're just getting a lot of this interconnections and body pain.
It seems almost kind of like being in the presence of this dark energy, dark power, makes you hyper aware of the pain in your own body. Like maybe it magnifies. So, you know, how we were talking on the last episode where in the greenhouse, Keltaine was having issues with the headache and the throbbing, and it felt like the pulsing of the ring was right. And so we were talking about, was that something he was doing to her, or was that something that was just kind of a byproduct of that energy? And I kind of feel like this is the same. She has a fresh wound. And so being in the presence of this dark energy, I feel like it probably just magnifies. Because, you know, her hands still hurt probably, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so just being in the presence of this dark energy, it's kind of like, damn, like, you know what I mean? Like, that just, it's pain because it's a, like she said, it's an energy or a sense of a dead something, right? Mm-hmm. A bad, evil, dark power. So it's kind of like feeding off of the pain.
Yeah.
Kind of how I was envisioning, especially with the connection with, you know, Keltaine's issue from the previous chapters.
Makes sense. I also wanted to note, like, Kale worrying more about Selena winning the competition and becoming the King's Champion, which is something that he's been helping her train to do this whole time. And now he's suddenly worried about letting her loose into the world. And yet he doesn't seem to have any qualms about any of the other would-be champions, the murderers, the Eye Eater, the Scythe, Kane, of all people. Like, he doesn't worry about them being set loose in Aurelia if they became the King's Champion. It feels just so targeted against Selena just because she was the greatest assassin. There were other assassins in this competition. Most of them got murdered. But, you know, right? Like, why does he keep just harping on this, like, one thing with her? Like, bro, if Kane wins, you're letting him loose out into the world, too. He's no better. Oh.
I think that would maybe be a result of Kale, I think, has an issue with accepting the idea that this 18-year-old girl is one of the most notorious trained killers in the kingdom. Because when you look at her, that's not what you see. But when you look at Kane, or you look at Scythe, or any of the other guys, you go, oh yeah, you can tell that dude's a dick. Like, you know, he'd probably murder his own mother, kind of, right? Mm-hmm. Then you look at Selena and you're like, this frilly loving, book reading, drooling in her sleep, like, and I think that he can't, like, get those two ideas together, that she is a girl with all the things that, a normal girl would love and like. But on the other hand, she slits throats and she kills, you know, albeit she says just bad people, right? But that doesn't make a difference. She's still an assassin. And maybe he's worried about, because she has become more of a person and more human to him, if she is the champion and she goes back out, that she's going to revert to being just the assassin again. And she won't be Selena, his friend. She'll be now the King of Adderland's champion assassin. Kind of, I don't know. Like, I could see a struggle with him, like,
yeah,
not wanting to lose all this kind of progress that she's made into back into a sort of normalcy.
I feel like he doesn't want to lose Lillian. Like, he likes Lillian.
Yeah, that's actually very accurate. The Lillian persona is the court lady, frilly, loves
book
the
loving.
Books and the, exactly, yeah. And Selena is the assassin, and
yeah.
And I think he has a struggle with that idea of they're not two people, they are. And if she is the champion, Lillian disappears.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
All right.
Just my thoughts, you know.
But Kale is still your boy.
I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's got a lot to learn.
He's a good guy. I just struggle with him being a contender romantically. But, yeah. So we begin chapter 45 with Nox and Selena training with swords. Selena's a bit off, trying to keep her distance from Kane, wondering if the black ring on his finger is tied to his horrible abilities. Nox notices the bite marks on her hand and he confronts her about it. He knows that she knows something, and she tells him that whatever happened to Varin and Xavier wasn't an accident, and if he's smart, he would get out of the castle. And Nox is smart. He knows that she isn't some jewel thief, and knows that Kane knows that she isn't either. Nox pieces it all together and knows who she is, and that she didn't just move to Indovir. She was a slave there. Putting all these together, he realizes why she can't just leave or flee like he can. Her choices are back to the mines or being the king's champion. She tells Nox that there is a creature killing the champions, and it'll probably happen again tonight, since it didn't happen last night, as there are 5 champions left. Nox calls her the queen of the underworld and tells her to rip Kane's head off. He follows her advice and slips out of the castle that night. Meanwhile, Caltaine's headaches are growing worse. She was invited to dine with Parrington's table, and she just had to take some opium before attending. This poor girl is having a trip on her way. The hallways are bleeding colors, oranges, red, gold. But while she's trying to make her way down, someone's approaching her, and this girl is seeing shadows leak from this person. And as he approaches, whispers of wings fill the air. Caltaine could have sworn things were swooping past him, hovering, circling. Kane bows his head and continues to pass by her. By the time Caltaine reaches Parrington's table, she has forgotten all about the encounter. Dorian and Selena play chess, and Selena notes that he happens to look nothing like his father. She tells him that she happened to run into his dad and was all right, but he tells her that she's actually trembling. Selena stalls, hoping to keep Dorian with her as long as possible. She doesn't want to be alone, especially not with the threat of Kane hovering. But Dorian does eventually leave, and Selena can't sleep. When she does fall asleep, she dreams of being young, of running, fleeing from a demon. Selena wakes up with a gasp. She made it through the night. Word spread quickly of Nox's departure, and the last test ended up being canceled due to Nox leaving. There are now 4 champions remaining. The final duel will take place instead, and it'll be between Kane, Grave, Renault, and Selena. Oh, I'm really happy Nox made it out alive. I actually really like Nox.
Yeah.
Really happy that he was not involved in the murders also. Never thought he really was. He didn't seem to have that kind of character to me, or personality. But I was glad he made it out, him and Paylor.
Yeah, and it was, I did like the way he, when he pieced everything together, because you get the idea that Nox is pretty smart, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's like, okay, exhibit A, bite marks, exhibit B, you're lying about something. She's like, look, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. And he basically was like, okay, try me.
I believe you.
Yeah, and, you know, and then she's just like, you know, yes, I am not this, and I didn't move here, and da-da-da. And he's like, well, if you didn't move, like, what else would you be doing in Dev? Oh.
And then you're her.
And then, yeah, he's like, would I have heard of you? And she's like, everybody would hear, you know, if you knew, you would know if you knew. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's all I need to know.
Yep.
I know exactly who you are. And that's all he needs. Like,
yeah,
it's like that's her. That, you know, that's the ticket right there. It's like, oh, yeah. You say, if you are saying as to get out of here, consider me out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that he was smart.
I do, too. I'm glad that he took her seriously and didn't out her. Like, he could have outed her, even though Kane already knows who she is. But he could have outed her, and he didn't. He was like, thanks for the tip. Peace. Out.
He could have turned that on her. I mean, any of the other champions might have been like, oh, like really? You're, you know? Or if any of the other sponsors knew. Or, yeah. You know, they could be like, what the hell do you mean? You're putting the greatest assassin against our arrow thief here? What the hell, guys?
And the backlash that it would have had on Dorian, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That could have just, but no, I like Nox. I'm glad that he was her friend and they became friends.
Nox was a bro.
Yes. To me, I don't know how Keltaine is functioning. I don't know how she managed to get up and traverse to go down to the hall for dinner. When I have my migraines, I am dead. I am in a black room, trying to sleep it off. Like, no lights, don't bother me. Never tried opium, don't plan on it. So maybe that kind of helps, but...
I mean, she was dealing with bleeding walls, so...
And seeing things swirling really around Kane.
See, that's interesting to me. I want to know if her being hopped up on the opium opened up her senses to where she was actually seeing this dark energy on Kane or coming out of him, or if it was indeed just all in her head. But it just seemed very pointed.
It did.
That she saw everything else is bleeding red, orange, gold, and da-da-da. Then she sees Kane, who's literally like a vacuum of light, right? And it's like shadows just emanating from his body. So it's kind of like, was the opium helping her to see, like, what, beyond the veil?
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Just, I don't know, just interesting to...
Visually,
because it just feels like there was something. She saw something.
And the fact that she doesn't remember, like by the time she approached Parrington's table, she doesn't remember any of this. So was that part of whatever the hell Kane's involved in? Or is that part of the opium that's like, you had a trip, now you don't remember any of it?
Yeah, right. It could be. I mean,
I kind of feel, I'm kind of leaning towards Parrington has something to do with it, because as a person and you're seeing stuff like that, like, wouldn't you freak the fuck out? I would freak the fuck out.
I mean, you would think so. I mean,
I feel like Parrington's the type that would be like, you have forgotten this. You saw something that you weren't supposed to. I need you under my control. I can't have you telling people that you saw, you know.
Dark energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, it seemed, well, I mean, Caltaine is, she's not having a good time. So.
No.
It could have been a combination of, you know, things. I mean, honestly, it sounds like she should not have been at this dinner.
To dress up and to do, you know, hair, makeup and all of that. And then, yeah, I have to go and eat with everybody, deal with the noise, make small talk like girl with the migraine. Like, you've seen me with my migraines. Like, I'm like, few words. Nope.
Yeah. So, I mean, we basically established that Kane is the bad guy.
Nope.
But we still don't have answers as to how.
No. Not yet.
But, so, I mean, we'll see. And, yeah, I mean, while all this is going on, you know, Selena and Dorian are, despite everything, still sort of getting close, you know, even though she's already told herself, huh?
They're having their moments.
Or, yeah, even though she's already said, you know, I can't do this, he's the prince, whatever, whatever. But they're, you know, playing chess and there's some, you know, there's some flirting going on and he's coming in and he's doing a little tease, you know, getting real close to her. And what does she do? I saw your dad. You know, and he's like, okay, not
mood killer,
not the how was that, how'd that go? Fine, it was fine, you know, like,
yeah.
I feel bad for Dorian because he is definitely trying, and you know that she is not adverse to the idea. But she's just not going to let it move forward. Like, yeah. She can't. Yeah. So we find, you know, she is trying to keep Dorian there because she doesn't want to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not really sure how to keep him there without leading him on. You know, like, I need you to stay, but in a non-romantic way. Can we do that, please?
And see, if she was just honest at the beginning, like, him and Kale could have figured something out, you know? Or at least if she had just told Dorian, he would have stayed. It could have been platonic.
Yeah.
But then she wouldn't want to endanger the prince either, you know?
That's true. yeah, and then, so he does eventually leave because he has to. And then, of course, she's got nightmares and she's not going to be ready for the next day. She's going to feel like crap the next day.
She needs therapy. She needs so much therapy for all the trauma she's been through, starting from, you know, when she was 8.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, she's not having a good night. And then we've got as we go to the next chapter, Dorian is out in the forest on a hunt, because that's what princes do, right? And he's thinking about Selena and just these interactions and everything. He comes across the stag, and he is preparing to, you know, to fire, but then he doesn't. He loosens, or he slacks his bow. And he sort of comes to the realization that he shouldn't have kissed Selena, because now no one else will compare, allegedly. He couldn't imagine being with or wanting anyone else. And her final test duel was tomorrow, which means that I'm guessing he was with her. They were playing chess. It was late. And then he left. And so he's doing some night hunting?
No, it's the next day.
Is it the next day?
Yeah, it would have to be.
Because I thought that when they were playing chess, that her duel was going to be the next day. Because Nox had left, and so they moved it up a day.
I believe they just canceled the test, but I don't think they moved the final duel up.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's been like a day or two in between.
I think so.
Okay. See, I had it in my head that he, like, left and then was like, I need to clear my head. And so he went out, like...
I think night hunting would be just a really bad, risky thing to do, especially for a prince.
He's Dorian. When is he not doing something he's not supposed to be doing?
That is true.
So, anyway, so he's out doing that, reflecting on that. And Selena is on her balcony overlooking Rifthold. She didn't want any visitors the night before her final duel. She needs time to reflect and to center on herself. Cain is strong. He has a lot of stamina. He isn't as fast as her that she knows of. She never actually sparred with him in practice, so she would have to pretty much dodge him for the first part of their fight, because she does know that one hit from him will be enough to wreck her world. Thankfully, she did do all that running with Kale. She contemplates what would be better, dying in the duel or returning to Endovir. I'm thinking dying in the duel.
Me too. I would rather die in the duel than go back to being a slave, knowing full well that this time around, you're not going to survive those salt mines. Like,
no. And like, then you, like, what, die of infection or something? Like,
or starvation. You could die from the whippings. Like, it could be anything at that point.
She's like, I just got my figure back.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to lose it again.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Kill me while I'm pretty.
She's also like, you know, die or become the king's champion. Is there really a difference? Like, her life is not going to be her own.
Because it's either die or take lives.
Yeah, she's gonna have to murder the people that he commands her to murder. Mm-hmm. Because at least, and this is surprising, at least with Erebin, she had a say in her jobs, right? No kids. No one from Terrasen, nobody innocent, right?
She was able to review, like, the job.
Is surprising that Erebin let her do that. Just because, you know, I mean, he just seems like a major dick.
He is, but he has his reasonings for everything that he does. And she seems to be such a strong-headed young woman that I don't think she's not the type to just blindly follow. I think she would have given Erebin a hard time and been like, no, I need to know more details about this before I take a mission.
So she's faced with this thing where it's basically like, I've got 4 years where my life is not going to be my own. I'm going to have to probably do things that I don't want to do, mm-hmm. but my freedom, or I could just die. But I don't really want to die. You know, She wants to stay. She's made friends, relationships, connections. And, you know, I mean, she's got Dorian and Kale and Nehemia. And these are connections, like, I mean, other than the connections that she had when she was in the Assassin's Guild, you know, Sam, but we know that Sam's not around. And since that point, she hasn't had any connections because, I mean, she was in the mines for a year, right? So, yeah, she's not going to want to give that up. I mean, who would?
No, she actually has something to live for now. She has relationships and friends and everything, and that's a hard call. I think if it was her being pulled out of the mines and then being faced with, I either die in a duel or I'm the king's champion, like, right away, she might have entertained just dying. Like, fuck it, I don't want to be the king's puppet. Just kill me now. Versus 3 months later, forming these connections, getting her strength back and everything. It's like, damn it.
Yeah, if she had been killed 3 months prior or faced with that decision, I think she would have just opted for the death. Like, she would have been like, no, I don't want to deal with this. But but now, no, that's not an option.
Our girl has just been through so much and continues to go through so much.
Yeah, it's you know, I was, when I was reading this, and I had noticed that Dorian specifically on his hunting saw a stag and then chose not to shoot the stag. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was wondering if that held a deeper meaning because of the meaning that the stag has to Celaena. Because the stag has to do with her, with Taryesyn, right?
Yes. I believe the symbol of Taryesyn is a stag, you know, like the white stag, but it's also like their constellation and the Lord stag. I don't know if Dorian stopped because of Celaena.
No, I meant for us, like the reader, if it was like symbolic, you know, of like him choosing not to kill the stag. Just because he just decided not to, you know? And so
I think it was significant. I just don't think he didn't do it because of any connection with Taryesyn or anything like that. But I think it specifically being a stag is significant because we know what the stag represents for Celaena.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for, was the symbolism of him. He has no idea. I don't think that was for him. I think that was for us.
Yes.
To show that he unconsciously is her ally, right? Obviously he wouldn't know that. Just
no, yeah, I think it was a good way of representing his and her new relationship and their dynamic and everything. It was very subtle, but yes, if you know Celaena, you know how much the stag means to her and everything, and the fact that Dorian chose not to go through with that kill and how it ties him with her and everything. I thought it was a good...
he's gonna try and protect her the best way he can, you know. I thought it was a nice little nod to, you know, the interaction between them on a higher level of
I agree. It was a good subtle nod.
And so that actually pretty much wraps up chapters 41 through 46. These chapters, compared to some of the other, you know, ones that we've done so far, these chapters have all been fairly short, you know, a couple pages. And so they're mostly just leading us up to this grand finale of the book.
Yeah.
Because anybody who knows anything about a Sarah J. Maas book knows that apparently the last 100 pages are the pages that just will destroy your world.
Yes.
And that's what we're getting up to. So.
Yes.
Next week, we're doing the final chapters, 47 through 55. It's the grand finale of the first book, Throne of Glass. And most everything is going to be answered. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of new stuff and new questions, which means that you got to start the next book. Except that we're not going to be starting the next book right away. Because then we're going to be doing a special bonus episode where we are reviewing two bonus scenes. That one takes place before Throne of Glass, and one takes place between Throne of Glass and Crown of Midnight. We will post the links to where you can find those so you can read them. And they're just short, little, they're like movie stingers, you know.
Short little bonus scenes.
Yeah. So next week we will finish off the regular chapters, and then the week after, well, actually, no, we're going to do a bonus episode, so we'll see what happens after next week. As always, we want to say thank you for joining us this week. We hope that you were entertained. We hope that you enjoyed the conversation and, you know, the insights and things that we saw while we were reading the book. We'd love to know what things you picked up on. Did you pick on something that we missed? Do you disagree with something that we thought we saw? Let us know. It'd be great to get some other ideas about what is happening here in this kingdom, because it kind of seems like everything's going to hell.
It usually does at first. So please remember to like, subscribe, and comment. Like we mentioned before, we are on social media, Facebook, TikTok, Threads, Instagram, YouTube. I think that's all of them.
For now.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you like what you hear so far, please share with your friends and family. Rate, subscribe. Those mean the world to us. And as we head out, please, please, please give some love and support to our friends at K911 Rescue. They are a rescue that is devoted to the cats and dogs that often get overlooked because, you know, they're the seniors, they're the handicapped, they need the special attention. Homeless, strays. They have 3 emergency dogs right now that they have pulled and rescued, and they need funding for it. And that funding comes from all of us, from donations. So if you can, head over to their website. We'll link them in the show notes. We also follow them on our social accounts, so you can find them through us. Again, K911 RESQ. Their little logo is an ambulance with 2 dogs hanging out. It's really adorable. We love them. And, you know, if you want to help foster fail, adopt, or just make a donation, volunteer, they could use any little bit that helps.
Yep. All right. Sounds good. So we will finish up on the next one.
All right. Take care.